Do not adjust your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network.
Cool. Across every time zone covering both hemispheres, it's time for another edition of Authors First on the Artist First Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. This is Z-Man sitting in the chair tonight. Tony K is on vacation. Tonight, for the next hour, we're going to spend some time with a fine gentleman that writes from his soul. He had experience in the military, the streets of Las Vegas, the adult industry, and several other ventures that he would rather not discuss, but you know what? We're going to ask him about it anyway. Let's welcome Antoine Banks. Hey, Ant, what's going on?
Hey, Z, how you doing, bro?
Doing good, man. The title of the book we're going to be talking about, listeners, is Made, Sex, Drugs, and Murder, The Recipe for Success. Yeah, we're serious, too. I know a lot of drug dealers, and they seem to be quite successful at times. Anyway, until they get caught, anyway. So, hey, well, welcome to the broadcast. It's a pleasure to have you on our network.
Glad you have me.
Now, where are we reaching you across the land tonight?
Right now, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
I think our last guest was in Atlanta, Georgia. So we're doing a doubleheader. We had two Authors First shows tonight, and both are from the great city of Atlanta. Well, it's customarily for me, when I interview an author, I like to talk about you as a person for the first few minutes because there's going to be some people hearing about you for the first time. So let's talk about your life. You were born then. What happened?
Born in Florence, South Carolina, small town in South Carolina, country boy. And, you know, born there, and I lived there in 89, went to college for a little bit, ended up going to the military. And when I was in the military, I found out soon after I got in that wasn't something that I wanted to do. So, you know, after after that first tour, I was like, God, I'm in a crash, you know. Got out real quick. But got married while I was in the military, traveled some, and ended up in Las Vegas. And once I got to Las Vegas, that's when everything started unraveling, you know. The divorce, the separation happened, and stuff like that, and that led to a whole different life for me adapting and overcoming, you know, to the situation.
Well, how do you get from ex-military going through what we're going to talk about, what you went through and other things? Well, of course, folks, it's a novel. We're talking about a novel here, so you're going to have to reveal as much detail as you feel comfortable, but it's an organized crime novel. And it's filled with life—a life of crime, love, and adventure. That's what's on Amazon. And again, the title of the book is "Made: Sex, Drugs, and Murder: The Recipe for Success." So, how do you go from that to becoming an author?
Well, what happened was when I was in Las Vegas, you know, looking for work, I ended up—I did a stint at the post office for a little bit, but I ended up working at this strip club as a DJ, and it was only a couple nights a week, but the money was good and I liked it. So,
now wait a minute. People paid you money to play music, which you would be listening to at home anyway.
Right.
You just played it over a bigger PA and watching strippers on the strip poles.
Yeah, and getting tipped by the strippers. So
now,
it was good.
Man, what a tough job that must have been.
Yeah, that's why I didn't leave it.
You wanted back in the military. That job was so tough.
Yeah, right. Anyway, what happened with that, man, was that, you know, I did that, and then I ended up coming back home down south to South Carolina after I did that for a year. And when I came home, initially when I came home to South Carolina, it was, Christmas, December. And my intention were to stay for a few months and go back to Vegas. when I got down to South Carolina, my hometown where I was from, me being me noticed that, you know, I'm trying to be the businessman. I'm like, well, they don't have any strip clubs down here in South Carolina where I'm from. You know, that's the opportunity. So I stayed there, grinded it out, and ended up opening up a strip club in South Carolina. It took me a year to do it, but I opened up a strip club in South Carolina, and that was 99 when I did that. And after I did that, I ended up, let's see, from 99 to, I closed the strip club in September 2010. So from 99 to 2010, I have a lot of stories to tell.
I bet you do, man.
A lot of stories to tell. I mean, it opened my eyes to a lot of things, to the everyday individual. I mean, from attorneys to deacons to preachers to the blue-collar man, everybody, man. Everybody comes through the strip club, and everybody has a story, whether you want to hear it or not.
That's right. It's a predictable crowd that goes to the strip clubs. Now, I'm not saying I go to that often, but I'm a professional musician, and I've worked with strippers, both male and female, on numerous occasions. You know, it's part of what they offer sometimes at some of the nightclubs as well. But you know, let's right now. I was going to ask and kind of be flaky and ask you, gee, what's it like to employ strippers? But I don't. But you know, here's the serious part about it. I know some people that live in my community that I work with that are absolutely good mothers. They're nice people, but they're strippers, and strippers get this. I think they sometimes. I mean, okay, there's bad ones too, but I think they sometimes get a bad rap. What was your take overall about the folks that work for you?
They do all the time, especially like, you know, down in South Carolina, it was, you know, real bad rep. And not only them, me being the owner also, you know, but that comes with the territory. But at the same time, a lot of them are, you know, they're regular people just like me and you. And they got bills to pay. They got lives to live, you know, they need money. And some of them do things they shouldn't be doing, but, you know, it happens. That's the business.
I'm sorry, I got focused on strippers there for a minute. You know, just my mind goes that way. So, all right. So 2010 comes along. You close the club you've had for almost 11 years, and then you decide, what now? I'm just going to write.
Well, actually, I ended up I started writing 2009. I started writing maid because I can tell that the run was about to end for the club. You know, the income that I was making when I first started, you know, started slowing down tremendously. And I was like, yo, I need something else to do. And I always used to write, you know, here and there, write stuff down, you know, just playing around with it, writing. And I can recall when I was in college, and I was going for architecture engineer, and my minor was journalism. I was writing. And my professor, she had us write this paper about something that happened in our lives that we wanted to share with people. And I wrote about this basketball game that me and some of my friends played in high school on an intramural team we had. And we won the championship that game. And I can recall writing the paper as I was writing. I was like, I need to figure out how to get the reader to feel excited as I was when I was playing this game. You know, I want them to feel the three-point jumper that won the game, the layups, the fouls, and that kind of stuff. And it was from that point that I found out that success lies in detail. So as a writer, for some people it's tedious when you write the detail and you go in every intricate detail when you write about it. It's very tedious. But it's like anything that you do, once you do it for a while, over and over again, it becomes second nature, and it don't bother you. I mean, this is the job that got to be done, and this time I'm going to do it. And the strange thing about that is that's how I like to write. So when I did that, I thought about it, and I found that paper. And I looked at the paper, and then I was writing this book, and a friend of mine, she read a few pages. She was like, Antoine. She said, you know, I read some of your stuff before. but I'm looking at this now. She said, you're not giving the reader all of you. You know, once you go in and, like you said, you told me about the details, but at the same time, tell everything. Don't skip nothing, you know. So it was from that point on that, you know what, I'm going to leave it all on the paper, and it is what it is. Whatever happens, happens. I'm putting it out there, and that's how the book came about.
Well, folks, you want to see what this handsome man looks like, you can surf over to printhousebooks.com. We have a link on our homepage. Take you right to it. There is Antoine Ant Banks. I like the way you spell your name with the last S in Banks. It's actually the only S in Banks is a dollar sign. Yeah, man, I like that. But there you are. You look like the boss. You got a cigar there. You got a diamond the size of a Frisbee on there.
For the strip club days.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like you said, yeah, what you want. Well, you know, I don't want to get too personal. I don't want, you know, like I say, we just met here, folks, so I don't want to ask too many personal questions of our guest tonight. But, you know, this is, again, the title of the book is Made, Sex, Drugs, and Murder, The Recipe for Success.
Right.
And the write-up about the book is, you know, the character, this is a novel. It's classified as an organized crime novel. Your character, Andy Cooper. Let's talk about Andy a little while. Of course, we can't help, you know, the fact that this book is basically very closely tied to maybe some stuff that happened in your life.
It's inspired by true events. It is. It's inspired by true events.
Right, and that's even up on the website. But,
right.
You know, Andy Cooper, you could have picked a name for anybody. Who's Andy Cooper?
Me.
But now, why'd you pick Andy Cooper? Is that just a random name out of the air?
Actually, it's a guy that I met. We used to call him Coop when I moved down south. And he was at, I'm not gonna name the club, but he was at another club. Me and him was real cool, and he was a manager of another club. And you know, we used to hang out sometimes to go to this club. And actually, before I opened my club, we used to go up there and do business. So I actually took the last name from him, Coop, and I added another name, and I came up with Andy Cooper. So, you know, with the characters in the book, almost every character can be related to somebody, someone that I knew, you know, growing up, or someone that I know now.
You know,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, I thought you were finished. I thought maybe I would read to the audience a little synopsis, what might get them a focus on what this book's about. And it goes, the journey you're about to embark on is about Andy Cooper, a military vet turned hustler, turned gangster, turned crime boss. His marriage is on the rocks. Fresh out of the military, AC finds himself broke and lost with a wife and three kids to feed. Trapped in Sin City and working any job he can get from day to day to make ends meet. Hating the state of mind he's in right now, a really fucked up way to be. Gone are the days when Uncle Sam paid for housing and daycare and all the grocery. Now all his own is his own again, with no idea of where his life is going to take him. One thing for sure, AC no longer wanted to wear that Army uniform another day. Coop loved every minute of it and would not trade it for the world, but the next chapter of his life was about to start. It just so happens that when he landed in Vegas, one of the hardest cities to make it in, it's truly the land of the hustler. What the outsiders don't know is that beneath the bright neon lights, the delicious buffets and luxurious casinos lies a whole different world that would eventually suck him in. That's the premise of the book, folks. Anton Cooper, he's going to be played by Denzel Washington in the film, right?
Yeah, Denzel could do it.
I bet he could, man. Well, you know, let's tease the audience a little bit about, you know, there we set it up. Here's Andy Cooper. He's broke. He's got a wife to feed. He's out of the military. The meal ticket from the Guns Go Sam is gone. You're working whatever odd jobs you can. So how do you get from that to being a
crime boss?
A crime boss. You said it.
All right. What happened was AC, you know, he ventured out trying to find something to do, a way to make an income. And, you know, at that present time, 1996 is the year that the novel takes place in Las Vegas. At that time, it was I would say several individuals working for different companies on the streets of Las Vegas, passing out flyers for escort services, strip club, and things of that nature. And he walked by these two guys, these Mexican gentlemen, and they put one in his hand, and he looked at it. And he said, I wonder how much money these girls make. I wonder how much are they giving to the people that actually, you know, the agency they're working for. So his mind starts to ponder, and then, you know, that being Vegas, a few buildings down was a strip club, and he walked in the strip club, got a drink, and he talked to a few of the dancers. He was asking about, you know, how much money they make, the escort service, and the strip club business, and so forth. And once he did that, he found out a little bit of information, but it really wasn't enough, you know, because he wanted to know more. So what he did, went all out. Went and got a hotel room, took the flyer he got on the phone, ordered an escort. The escort he ordered on the flight was this Brazilian bombshell. I think in the book, I think her name was Carmen. And he called, said, you know, I want to book a date with Carmen. She came, you know, didn't come to the hotel. She came to the hotel. She knocked on the door. He looked through the peephole. When he looked through the peephole, he seen that Carmen looked nothing like she did in the flight. Actually, she's like a crackhead. She was skinny. The one thing that was right was the hair color. The blonde hair was right, but everything else was not right. So they get into altercation. He cursed her out and tells her to get the hell on. And the agency call. He cursed the agency out. He gets mad. Leaves the room, goes downstairs to the pizzeria, get a slice of pizza and a glass of beer. While I'm sitting there eating a pizza and drinking a glass of beer, this fine young lady approached him, asked him how the pizza tastes, you know, and he offered her a piece of his. So she sat down, and they started talking and everything. The lady name was Sabrina. Him and Sabrina eventually ended up leaving the restaurant, going to a club, partying and everything. One thing led to another. After the club, they end up going to this one restaurant in Vegas. It's still there, I believe, called the Pepper Mill. Went to the Pepper Mill and had some breakfast. And after breakfast was over, Sabrina offered to pay for breakfast. And she pulled out this knot of money. And she looks at her like, where the hell did you get all this money? She was like, for my job. We're like, what the hell you do, rob banks? What the fuck is going on? Excuse my French. Like, what's going on? She's like, nah, dance. I dance at the club, you know, a few nights a week, and it's my money. So to him, it was like fate. This is something I want to do. Now I ran into a girl that does this. Maybe she can teach me or tell me something about it or put me on so I can get in the game. That's how he was thinking. And long story short, that's what happened. He ended up falling in love with Sabrina. Sabrina introduces him to the adult industry, the club that she works at. Her two bosses, Vinny and Bobby, two Italian guys from the mafia that own the club, they end up meeting AC. But when they met AC, it wasn't by him going to apply for a job. It's by him actually dealing with Sabrina. And him and Sabrina went to the club one morning, actually the next morning, to pick up her car after she spent the night at his place. And once they got there, in the parking lot, sitting on her car was her ex. Well, to her, it was her ex. But to him, they were still involved.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So, you know, she seen him, and she was like, AC, oh, no, I don't have to deal with this crazy guy again. I don't want to do it. I want to do it. He was like, who are you talking about? And she was like, this guy over there, that's my ex, and he's tripping. I don't want to deal with it. And AC was like, don't worry about it. We'll handle it. Go get your car, and let's get out of here. So he parks. They rode there on a motorcycle. He parks the motorcycle. Sabrina gets off, goes to get in her car, and her ex approaches her, starts cursing out, calling names, and he says something to AC, and he pushes AC. They go back and forth. AC reaches under his seat of the motorcycle, turns around, and he caps the guy. And he falls out dead in the parking lot. And that's where the story begins.
And folks, if you're just tuning in, that's Antoine Antbanks. And the book we're talking about is called Made, Sex, Drugs, and Murder, The Recipe for Success. It's available at printhousebooks.com. You can use the links provided on our homepage. And you can also see Antoine right there. He fits the bill.
Let me interrupt for a minute. You can also get it at Amazon.com. You can get it on your Amazon Kindle, your Barnes & Noble Nook, on your iPad, on your iPhone, via the Amazon Kindle app, the Nook app, the Kobo app, Google Play Books app. It's worldwide. It's everywhere. You can get it. Phone, iPad, e-reader, paperback, online, however you want. It's there for you.
And how cool is it, folks? I don't know if you pay attention to stuff like this, but more books are now sold as ones and zeros, in other words, as downloads, than all of the printed copies combined in any given month. And it'll never, ever go back to that. Yeah, we'll always have paper books, but the ratio is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. You know, everybody always wants to have, you know, a book around, but my kid grew up with something in his hand. Well, maybe that didn't come out right. He had an electronic device in his hand. So they're used to this. You can't see a person walking down a road if they ain't staring at the palm of their hand, looking at something there. So, but don't you think that technology is wonderful, too, that that somebody could go right now to Amazon.com and they could download your book, right?
Right.
And it's instant gratification. They can be reading this 15 minutes after the show's over. And it's cheap. It's inexpensive. You know, you don't have to, you know, and there's no books that are thrown away. Anybody, you ever looked into how the book industry used to operate with the large numbers of books they put on the shelves? If they don't sell, they would destroy them.
Exactly.
What a stupid way to run an industry.
Great.
Okay. Well, anyhow, so what a great time to, but on the converse side, what a great time to be an author. You know, as you were writing about Coop and recalling these experiences basically based around your life, you know, was it a way, I mean, obviously, you may have had to reflect on some things that happened that you may not have thought about for a while.
You're right. You're correct. I was so amazed that when I was writing and I got to certain scenes, I was like, well, wow, I forgot all about this. And then that leads to a whole other chain of events that I forgot about. And, you know, I believe every author, no matter fiction or nonfiction, fiction is just the same because there is a core truth in it. It has to be. I think so.
Well, what's the writing mantra? Write about things that you know. And you know this business. You know this. Well, we don't want to give away too many details of the book, only the ones that you're comfortable with. But to actually sit there and have to recall things, and you might make some alterations, right? The names have been changed, situations. It is a novel, but it's based on truth, you know, where there's maybe some of those things that weren't the most pleasant of memories that you kind of put away for a while that you're forced to recall.
Yeah, some of them brought back some feelings that I didn't care to go back on, but, you know, hey, it's all in a day's work, I guess.
Well, we can assume that Mr. Cooper's life is not, from that point forward, is not just milk and honey.
Oh, it's not milk and honey. He's actually now, that's how he ended up going through a life of crime, you know, for the sex, drugs, and murder, all that comes in, and it plays a major part. And the crazy thing about it, as you get deep into the book, you see he got these friends that actually lived in Vegas that was with him in the military, and they're real tight now, and he brings them into the picture. Because what happened after the incident at in the back of the club, I believe Vinny came outside and was like, what the hell is going on? And Sabrina told what was going on. So that's how Coop, AC, you want to call him, end up working with Bobby Vinny at the club. He got a job because now he owes him a favor because, of course, they got the body cleaned up the mafia way, you know?
Yeah.
And, and I kept the cops off his back, so now he's in debt to them. And him, being ex-military and a go-getter, don't want to be in debt to anybody. He feels now he's threatened. His back against the wall. His life can end at any time, and he wants to control his own life. So,
do you think that contributes to it? I mean, you knew you were when you got in the military, you didn't want to be there after a while, but, you know, it does require a certain mental mindset to enter the military in the first place. You know what you're, you know you're going to be facing some shit you don't want to face, and you're going to be forced to do stuff you don't want to do. Do you think that discipline, you know, having to do things you don't want to do, but to finish the mission, set things up, your mindset, your personality for Coop when he gets these opportunities?
Yeah, of course it did. I mean, nothing is impossible. You know, what's impossible today is quite possible tomorrow, you know. But the thing about it is, if you can't get it done right now, figure out how to get it done and get it done. And that's the situation he found himself in, you know. So what now he got, of course, he's divorced. They're separated. He's not his wife anymore. But he has a new love in his life, Sabrina. But it comes at a price. I don't know what you call her, you know, a love of his life or the bad luck charm. She's getting him into shit constantly.
Yeah, right away. He's known her for 4 hours. Now he's in bed with the mafia, and he's got he could catch a charge that puts him in jail for the rest of his life. And what a change 24 hours can make, man.
Right, exactly. That's all it takes. That one decision. He could have told her no at the restaurant and went to the room, but he went with her. So you know, hey, there you go. But it gets worse. It gets deeper. But I have a cousin that he's younger than me, but he went to school at SCAG, which is Savannah, or I forget the name of it, it's the Art Institute. Anyway, he went to study film. And I was talking to him about it, and I was like, you know, I'm writing this book, but I want action, man. I want people to feel, I want emotions, the whole thing. He said, well, he showed me how to write a movie script, a screenplay. And I took that same concept and I wrote the book. And it helped me a whole lot when I was writing. Like when I end one scene to start another, you know, describe the day, the surroundings, the heat. You know, like I said, I want you to feel the heat, you know. If you ever been in Las Vegas, you know, it is hot as hell in Las Vegas during the summer.
Yes.
I'm talking 110, 115 degrees on the average. It's crazy. Crazy.
But it's a dry heat.
Exactly, dry heat. I remember nights. I used to leave the club and go home, and I had a 300ZX T-top, and I would take my shirt off, man, and drive. It's like 3 in the morning. No cool air blowing the car. It's like all hot. It's like a blow dryer just blowing heat on you. It was crazy. Crazy. You couldn't even touch the door handles or the steering wheel during the day. It would burn your hand. Sick.
Yeah, you got to wonder why they put Vegas where they put Vegas. There's no water. They got to pipe it in from the freaking Colorado Rockies.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, but it is what it is. And, you know, is it safe to assume that you're not going to be in certain businesses, let's just say certain underground businesses in Las Vegas, unless you are directly paying off or directly involved with the organized crime, because they ain't gonna let you do it.
I'll put it to you this way, indirectly, because there's some legit ways that they do it. But you, after you be working somewhere for a while, for a few months, you'll notice. I put it to you that way. After a few months, you will notice.
But do you think that reputation that if you are, let's just say, some guy decides he's going to go open up a strip club. He buys a property, sets a strip club up, and they start doing business. Won't he get a little visit from the competition?
He won't even get a license.
I see what you're saying. Oh, I mean, that ain't ever going to happen. That's what it is.
No, it's not going to happen. Won't even get a license.
Yeah, well, okay.
Yeah, won't even get a license. Because, I mean, here's the thing. When I worked at the club, and I'm not gonna name the club, but it was owned by a mafia guy. The club I DJed at. What really got me was that they took care of the people. I mean, I got paid by the hour. I got cash tips by the girls every night I worked. 401k, and at the end of every shift, the club tipped me cash money. Can't beat that.
Yeah.
So why would you mess that up? You see?
Yeah, You know, I've played over 3,000 gigs in my life. I still play. We play six times in the next 12 days. We were working musicians. I find that wonderful, but I find it surprising that the dancers would tip the DJ. That's great. Thank God that never happened where I'm from.
But, you know, that's standard, man. That's standard. Whatever, you know, strip was, what I would say in Vegas, that's standard. I don't know about anywhere else.
Yeah, that's I'm telling you, that's not where, that ain't happening around here, man. It's usually the musicians chasing the bitches with $10 bills. Here, take this.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's how it is, man.
Hey, let's just say one more thing, if we're on the stripper thing for a minute. I worked with, it wasn't the Chippendales, but it was the local version, you know, a traveling troupe that was mimicking, you know, tried to be the minor leagues of the Chippendales. And okay. We did this big-ass nightclub in Akron, Ohio. I don't know. It probably held close to 1,000 people. And these guys were there, and it was women only were allowed in. You could, there were no other men in the audience except the guys dancing in my band.
Okay.
Talk about shooting fish in a barrel. But let me just say the one thing. You know, for any guys that's ever been to a strip club, you know somebody has a few beers, they start acting a little stupid. You should see these women, man. These housewives. Oh, it's way, 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 way more. Nuts
way
and crazy.
More.
Nuts. Now, am I right?
You're right.
Now,
right.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know, man, because I'll tell you what. When I had my club in South Carolina, I used to one Sunday a month, I used to have the guys come down and dance with a girl, and it would be crazy. I'm like, it's like I had to have extra security for when the girls came, man. I didn't understand that. I don't know why. It's just wild. I guess for us, it's often we can go see any day. You know what I mean? Any given day of the week, we could go to a strip club. But for them, it's got to be, you know, something like that once a month or whatever. I guess depending on where they live at. I don't know.
Well, and you know, when you put a group of women together, I don't care if they're strippers there or not, they act like women. That's the way they're made. You know, it's kind of a different atmosphere. It's not the same thing as a bunch of guys. But, you know, you see some librarian ripping her, taking her sweater off and trying to hump some guy on a table. You know, it's like, man, if they let's videotape this and blackmail that lady, man. You know, these are housewives and mothers. And if their husbands and boyfriends had any idea how they acted at places like this.
Right.
Yeah, then
I
think that place, the time we did that, that club opened their doors at midnight. And, you know, like the dancers were on from 8 to midnight, packed house. And then they opened the doors, and the parking lot's full of guys because they're racing in there to these hormone-elevated, drunk, horny bitches. You know, hundreds of them. I wonder how many marriages ended that night. But, yeah, you know, I seldom get a chance to talk to someone who has – shared that experience, and I just wanted to make sure I wasn't crazy.
Oh, you're not crazy, man. You're not crazy. But I'll tell you this, though. When you see them, it was funny to me because some of the girls I knew, you know, that came, and then when I see them outside the club, like I'd be at the mall or something, a restaurant, and they'd be with their old man. I just look at him and laugh. I'm like, boy, if he knew what you was doing, that night.
Yeah, so they just videotape it. That's what we could do. Videotape it, and then you can, you know, can you say blackmail? Hey, I got this video of you and your sister getting crazy at the club. So without giving away something special from the book that we'd rather they buy it and read it themselves, what's one of the craziest things you saw at the strip club?
One of the craziest things I've seen. A lot of crazy.
Does things ever get out of hand? I mean, you know, if a well-run club, make sure things don't get out of hand. But
right.
Sometimes they do anyway. Anything happen, you know, that you want to...
The craziest thing I ever seen, this guy and his dad was in the club. And they was in there drinking, shooting pool. They actually didn't get no dances or anything. They was just drinking and shooting pool. And, you know, I was up front. And this lady... Well, two ladies came in, and I looked at her. I said, "You all right today?" She said, "I'm doing okay." I said, "You sure?" Because she had this disgusting look on her face like she wanted to rip somebody's neck off. I said, "Oh, you sure you're all right?" So I came around the counter, and I approached her, and I said, "Can I help you with something? What's wrong?" She said, "I'm coming to get his ass right there." I'm like, "Who are you talking about? That goddamn guy right there.
Uh-oh.
So, hey, I went, hold up. Calm down, man. Hold up. I go get him for you. He need to come now. She started talking over me and everything. She said, get your ass over here right now. I'm like, wow. So he like, he wasn't coming. I said, dude, you need to come on so before we get irate up in here. So he walked over. And then his dad came over. She said, how you got my husband in this damn strip club? Get all our rent money. You better have his ass home. I was in there about to die laughing. She cursed him out. The dude walked out the door. She kicked him in the butt, slapped him in the head. I'm talking about all the way to the car. And told his dad, don't you bring your butt to my house no more.
How bad is it? How bad? I hope that guy's not listening tonight, because how much does your life suck when you go out to the strip club and your wife comes and gets you and kicks you out the door?
Right. That was funny. And he was with his dad. Come on, man.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
That's one of the craziest things.
And, it is a... For people that have never gone to a strip club, it's probably an odd experience. Their only experience is to see something on TV. And,
right,
you know, they
right.
get it pretty close sometimes. But to be in that atmosphere and, you know, at 11:30 in the morning with pounding music and a bunch of drunks, and it's a kind of a unique environment that perhaps a lot of people will never experience.
Yeah.
Well, this book... by the way, I should remind people who may have just tuned in, our guest tonight is author Antoine Ant Banks, and the S is a dollar sign. His book we're discussing is entitled Made, Sex, Drugs, and Murder, The Recipe for Success. And this is inspired by true events. Our character in the book, of course, is Andy Cooper, but it might be or might not be loosely based on some of the stuff that Ant went through. Did you think... Coop pulls up with
Sabrina
at the behind the club and has the incident with Sabrina's ex, you know, did you know where it would go from there? I mean, obviously you're writing about your life, right? But so I'm asking the character of the book, not you. Did Coop think that his life would end up where it is today? I mean, or was he sort of carried along by the currents of what was happening around him?
He was carried along by what was happening around him. He was. And after he kind of got a hold of what was going on, he called in his buddy for help, you know, to get him out of the situation. Well, to take control of the situation. I don't want to give away too much, but I will say this, that's that one scene, you know, where he shot her ex. That's, I would say, the beginning of a lot of violence that's happened in the book. But it's violence that needs to happen, but at the same time, for those of you that are strategic, it's a lot of military planning, you know, and making things happen and stuff like that. So the military expertise come into play. His buddies that was in the military, they're with him, all that comes into play. But at the same time, they're having fun, they're living life, and, you know, they're doing all this simultaneously. And one of the characters, his name is Looney, it is his buddy, and he always tell him, Coop, man, you're going to get us in trouble chasing this woman around. So let no good pussy get you in trouble and get us all messed up. And he constantly keep telling him that, but he keep ignoring him, and they get deeper and deeper and deeper. So.
There's an old saying we use around here, pussy done runt my mind. Right there.
Well, she got him gone, I tell you that.
And, you know, there's probably, in the line of work, in the industry they're in, dealing with the people that run that in the Sin City capital of the world, there's no way to get away from violence, because that's what makes organized crime organized crime. They're willing to use violence to get what they want.
Right.
And, you know, the guys don't show up in the long coats at closing time and threaten to sue you.
Oh, no.
You know, that's what makes them what they do. The whole fact that they're experts at violence, and violence is their way of life, that it's almost unavoidable in those realms. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. And they do. They have a way of approaching you. Just like me, you're talking right now and saying certain things a certain way. You don't want to do that. Stuff like that. Okay, I got the message. You don't want to do that. I won't do that.
Okay.
You know? Okay, I got the message.
Well,
you know?
How about you in your personal life? Because, again, I don't want to give away too many details of the book, but
okay.
In your personal life, was there ever a situation where you felt, uh-oh, this is it, my time is up? You know, you're looking down the barrel of a gun, you think there's a bomb under your car, or five guys at your door?
I'll tell you what, it was a situation, and this is in South Carolina. I believe it was the second year I had a club, and we were closing. I never forget this night. We were closing. Actually, my sister had came by there that night, and the phone and my club manager at the time answered the phone, and the guys asked him something like, he had changed or something like that. I forget what it was. And they were inside closing up, counting the money and everything, and I walked outside to my car. And when I got outside, I heard somebody say, "Give me all your shit." I'm like, "What?" So I turn around. It was three guys. And they had Sybil 45s. And I'm looking down the barrel of the gun. But they had masks on, but I'm looking in their eyes. I could tell they were young. And they were nervous. But, I stayed calm and everything. Actually, while the guy was talking to me and telling me to give up my stuff, I was actually approaching him slowly so I can grab the gun and take it from him, you know. But before I got to that point, he backed up, and I see he backed up. But under my seat, I kept a .357. So when he backed up, I was backed up towards the against the car, the driver's side, and I took my left hand, opened the door, and I went down fast as I could, man, and got out of that seat. And when I looked up, they hauled ass. They were gone.
That was a good decision they made to haul ass.
They were gone.
Might have been otherwise, it might have been the last thing they did.
Because I was like, I'm not going out like this, bottom line. Here's the kicker. The gun went under my damn seat.
And you look up and they're standing next to you. What are you doing now, man?
Right.
And then they shot you.
Right. I was like, whew. But yeah, that happened. But I wasn't scared, though. I was amazed at myself. I wasn't scared. I guess the military, you know, I'm trying to handle that situation. But yeah, that's the only time that did really happen, though. The book is fiction, and of course, you know, some of the things in there, I'd be locked up right there. That crazy stuff. But it's a good book. It's a book that's about action. It keeps you on the edge of your seat. It makes you want to read. I should also say that there's several sex scenes in the book that's quite erotic, and I do write in detail. So for women that read the book, I'm warning you now. I have a lot of friends in a focus group that I got, you know, that read the book and let me know how they feel about the book and give me comments and stuff like that.
Were you thinking of women as readers when you wrote the book, or did you just write the book and let the chips fall where they may?
Women. I was focused on women. My whole thing was I'm going to focus on the women. I want to entertain the women. Because I know if a woman reads a book and she likes a good book, her man going to wonder, like, what the hell are you reading? Let me see what's going on in this book. He's going to read it, too. And the crazy thing about it, that's happened several times already. I had several girls I gave the book, and they're like, well, my boyfriend took the book, and he's reading it. I didn't even finish the fifth chapter. You know?
We say, call me, I'll read it to you.
Nah, I won't do that. It's one person I read to, though. I don't know if she's listening now, but I read to her. Anybody else?
Well, I've been told by people in the business that 7 out of 10 books purchased are purchased by women. So that's
That's good.
I think that's accurate. I don't know, listeners, am I right? And if that is, then you're obviously writing for the right crowd.
That's exactly who I'm writing for. I can tell you that.
That's exactly right. You know, it's kind of like being a band and playing at a nightclub. If you play music that women want to like and women want to hear, you'll soon have a bar full of women. And if you got a bar full of women, guess what's going to happen?
You're
going to have a bar.
Come.
They're going to come like flies to shit, man. They're going to be there. Yeah, I mean, why not pick the right genre? Well, you know, like, you know, you're like your cousin's trying to, you know, helping you with the screenplay on this. Obviously, this is an action-packed, you know, this is a movie. This is a, you know, especially, well, look at all, it's based in Vegas. It has, involves, you know, strippers, all the things. It pushes all the buttons that Hollywood would love to put up on the screen.
Right. That's why I put the subtitle, Sex, Drugs, and Murder. And, I think that's the recipe for success.
Have you thought about that? Have you thought about putting this out and seeing if someone wants to buy the script? And
I'm going to let you know the secret. My way of thinking is this. I wanted it to be a movie, but I said, why not write it as a book? And that wouldn't get you sold as a book and a movie.
Exactly.
Now, when I first got done writing it, I sent copies out to different agencies and stuff like that. And the main character, AC, was to be played by Mekhi Phifer. Looney was one of the supporting actors, was to be played by Tyrese. It's two female characters. One was supposed to be played by Salma Hayek, and the other one was, I forget the other lady name, I'm not sure. But I had the characters picked out for it when I wrote it. So some of the parts of the book I was writing, I had those characters in mind that I was writing for. So when they read it, and they, you know, I guess they can feel, you know, that it was written for them. So, like I said, what's impossible today is possible tomorrow. I'm always shooting for the stars, man. Always.
So, this was your first novel. Is that right?
Yes.
So you had to learn all the things, you know, we talked about earlier on how to put the book together and do it correctly. And but what was your modus operandi? Would you wake up in the morning and write all day, or would you wait till it struck you? Of course, you know, when you're writing basically based on your life, you don't have to create the ending. You sort of know where we're going with it, right?
Yeah, I knew where I was going with it, and I knew the ending. And to answer the question, when I wrote it, I wrote whenever I felt it. If it's in my head, I got to get it out on paper. Once I get it out on paper, then the next scene or idea can come to my head, and I put that out on paper. You know, then once I put it out on paper, then I read back over it, and I format it, make sure it's fluent and it's making sense, make sure everything is lined up and the timing is right on it. I want it to be perfect. I want when the reader reads it, I want it to be flawless. I want them to flow through it. And I want them to understand what I'm saying, what I'm seeing. I want them to touch what I touch, hear what I hear, see what I see, taste what I taste.
Hey, well, if this gets made into a movie, I got some great theme music in mind.
Yes, you do.
Hey, we actually, awesome.
Go ahead.
Our station actually worked with a project with Fananka Enterprises back in the early 90s, and I think it was movie number 7 for them. It was going out under a Disney label, and that went to shit in a hurry. You know what? The people in the movie business need to exist because they're the only people that can make the people in the record business look good.
They are. I feel you.
That is a cesspool of backstabbing. Okay. I just don't like the movie business, but I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. It had no relevance to your program at all. I'm sorry for digressing there. We are running close to the top of the hour here. Let's remind everybody that the title of the book, when you go to buy this, as soon as we're done, folks, you need to go buy this book right now. The title is Made, M-A-D-E, Sex, Drugs, and Murder, The Recipe for Success, and it is available. Tell them all the places they can get it.
All right, my website, printhousebooks.com. It's PRINT, housebooks.com, amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com, or you can get it on your Amazon Kindle, Barnes & Noble Nook, your iPads, iPhones, smartphones, Blackberries, via your Amazon Kindle app, your Nook app, Google Playbook app. Anywhere you find books electronically, you can get it. For author, look up Antoine Ann Banks, and the title of the book is Made, and you'll have it.
And, of course, folks, well, I just want to remind them that all of the titles, all of the links, if you're listening to this program as an archive, the links that were provided are still there. We always want to make it very easy for you to find the materials you want. And listeners, we thank you in advance all these years. You guys have done such a terrific job. We get letters back from the guests that we're on, and they're very thankful for the sales that are made. You know, probably doesn't happen to everybody, but, you know, folks, if you like the title, if you like the book, support a new author, and support the arts. Put some money in an author's pocket, not some Madison Avenue guy, fat bastard that's already riding around in a limousine. Am I allowed to say that?
You did already.
Ah, crap. Was I talking out loud? Folks, you know what we're doing. Hey, you're welcome here anytime, Antoine. You're an interesting fellow, and I look forward to the people getting to know about your book. We've got about a minute left. Any shout-outs you want to give tonight?
Shout-out to my mom for raising me and being there for me and teaching me how to pray and keep God in my life. I want to say that.
Amen, brother. Well, you're a fascinating guy. I look forward to, I didn't even ask you. Do you think, you know, this is your first novel? Do you think there's a second one?
Oh, this is book one of a trilogy. How about that?
Wow. You are ambitious, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we probably, I almost called you Antoine Cooper there.
Right.
Yeah, we say, well, I guess you are. That's a Freudian slip. Well, we are just out of time. Aunt Antoine, oh God, I'm going to call you Cooper again, Banks, and the S is a dollar sign. He's been our guest on Authors First tonight. This is Z-Man. I've been sitting in for Tony K, who's on a well-deserved vacation. He'll be back with us next week. And Antoine, anything Artists First can do to help you sell this book, help you get the word out there, we are at your disposal, my brother.
All right, my man, appreciate it.
Folks, the CBS News is heading your way in about 45 seconds. You're listening to the Artist First Radio Network. Project Urantia follows the news, and so does the Artie Kornfeld Show after that. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, and we'll see you next time.